Welcome back, everybody. This is episode 3, and we've got a very special guest all the way from across the pond, as we like to call it, in Virginia, USA. It's Joshua Rennie from the Spill Team.
Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing. Hello, Joshua.
Hey. Good to be here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And we're here today to talk about kind of human-centered design, design thinking and designing strategy for business. So we discovered Joshua and Spill Team a few months ago, I think probably through Instagram, and I attended one of their online events, one of their events all about design thinking and innovation and stuff. And I'm a big believer in first impressions, right? And these guys have some energy and some good knowledge to share. So it made an impression. So here we are. So Joshua, do you want to first off introduce yourself and then tell us UK people a bit about Spill Team?
Yeah, sure. In a nutshell, Spill Team, without going too deep into it, without getting to the psychology of it and all that other stuff, is really just help people get unstuck. You know, it's really what it is. Organizations that are truly just kind of on the hamster wheel of thinking, you know, and the whole idea is to really kind of live in that space of safety margin when it comes to solving challenges and dealing with that, so people could really kind of just be free in their thinking and save them time, more efficient, you know, bring in the innovation, the idea that they really need to, and really just get out of their own way. It's kind of really it, is that I think we as people kind of do it to ourselves. We punch ourselves in the face and then wonder how the black eye happened. It's like, how did that happen? You know, and so really just helping organizations kind of get unstuck, man, think more clearly, see more clearly, and be able to envision like being fully present and fully futuristic at the same time.
You know, that's great. That's really good.
That's the fluffy, like Mary Poppins, like type of answer.
Yeah, no, that's good, man. We like Mary Poppins over here, right?
Me too.
But it's interesting you use the word unstuck. So there's been a lot of conversations here and a lot of work with kind of leadership groups and entrepreneurs. So over here, as we record this, it's kind of mid September. So we're in theory coming out of the back end of lockdown. I don't want to
forecast. We're just going to go back in again. Just
who knows? about to re-enter the second lockdown. Who knows, right?
Yeah, vacation from lockdown, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm disappointed because they've abandoned the Nando's piri-piri scale, so I don't know where we are now.
that was the most useful bit of comms we've seen about it.
Yeah,
anyway.
It really was.
Anyway, but... We're in that time, so we've had a here, Joshua, in the first few months, so March and April, right, there was what I like to call people went into hibernation. Like a lot of companies went, nope, I'm not coming out till the end, and locked themselves away anywhere, right, and just vanished off the face of the market, right, out of the market. And have started to poke their heads out, maybe kind of July, maybe into August, and go, is everything okay? Do we have a business? And obviously quite a lot's changed in those few months. People were hunkered down over there, right? So they're coming out and the problems that they went in kind of with fear for are now even bigger hurdles, because people have figured stuff out and are now doing all right and moving forward. So the people who were stuck with an option and went, no, I'm just going to wait it out with all the toilet rolls that UK have for some reason. They just hunkered.
Bomb shelter of toilet rolls and sanitizer.
That's it. And all their spreadsheets, I imagine.
Right.
That's all they needed. And they just waited it out in their grey suits and red ties. No offense if you've got a grey suit on, people. But waited it out there. But now there's a lot of people who are stuck, right, and trying to get unstuck, and there's no end of rubbishy business to business webinars that are farming out the PowerPoints of how to use a SWOT analysis
and be resilient, right? Like, if I see one more resilient email of an event, you know, I'm like you're going to teach strategic resilience? Is that even possible? Like, doesn't it start with the individual? Like, so I completely get it. If I get one more email inviting me to a process of resilience of like, you know, I'm going to go into that bunker myself.
Yeah, you're with that with resilience. I'm the same with the new normal. If anybody says the new normal to me anymore, it's...
I'm going to taser them, right? We're going to taser them.
We need some fancy drone network that we can just eliminate people. I'm with you guys, but mine is relaunching. Like you shouldn't have stopped. Like you just shouldn't have stopped. What are you relaunching for?
Touché.
Repivot. Like relaunching into the new normal, a new, more resilient company. But it's that unstuckness, right? That unstuckness that I think methods and strategies like the human-centered design ones that we all love are good at overcoming, right? So where do you guys start? Tell us about your kind of process with getting companies unstuck over there.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Just going back to where you were talking about with COVID, I remember, you know, it's funny. This is like one of our busier times that we've ever been, which is amazing. You know, it's actually just beautiful. But I remember talking to a lot of organizations, and we've been talking like to people in Kenya, you know, and all these different organizations here in the States, across the world. And when you talked about, you know, organizations kind of hunkering down, what's interesting is when COVID first started, we started hearing people say, I'm going to be innovative and we're going to, you know, do things different and, you know, all these things. And it was funny, I was talking to a bunch of organizations and I was watching this trend of decision-making within organizations. I was watching it happen. And as we were sitting down talking with them, they were telling me what they tried to do and what they were doing. And I said, how do you say that you're being innovative when your decision that you just made to save your organization or business was the same that the other 20,000 made? Yeah. I was like, how did you get a room full of degreed individuals in the room together and say, I got it. The best idea. This is the new one. This is the fresh one. This is what's going to take us. And it ended up being, you landed on the same thing that everyone was doing. So if you think of like the restaurant industry, I don't know, you guys are, if it's grab and go for you guys also, takeout, yep. Right? And so every restaurant now has pivoted to that for the most part, has pivoted to takeout, grab and go. By not choosing to really be innovative and create new ideas, the market now became more competitive than it's ever been. Ever.
Yeah, the restaurant themselves.
Right. It is exactly. It is more saturated now because of people's lack of ability to come up with a new idea and set themselves apart than it's ever been. And so it's interesting. Everyone just grew up to stay safe. And now they're looking to the left and right and they're competing harder now. They like, again, one of those walk around, punch yourself in the face and wonder how it happened. Like they're literally walking around now more competitive. So now you're talking marketing and brand and all these other things. You got to do more work like now than you were having to do before the once in a lifetime pandemic took over the world. And so, you know, really what we start there at that place of getting people to really understand. The first thing they have to do is understand that the way that they've been operating just isn't working. Like they have, and not in a shameful, guilty way, but in a way of saying like something we're doing is not working and I accept that. And if we get them to that point, if it starts there, then it's a beautiful thing. Then we can introduce like human-centered design, solving the challenge in a new way. But they got to get to that place of what I've chosen to do as an organization, as a business owner, is actually not serving me well. That's where it all really starts.
To get them to that place, Josh, do they have to have a commonality amongst those people in that room? So it may be monetary, for example, like they're trying to save jobs. It might be that actually they realize that the world's changing and have to pivot for the good of the whole of the company. But have they all got to get into that one singular place as a group of people so they can all work from that same basic point?
Yeah, well, I say there's two types of learners. There's those that burn their hand on the stove, and then there's those that watch people burn their hand on the stove. You know, and so they have to decide what type of learner they're going to be, you know, to say what place are they at? Because you could be at different places, right? You could be at a place where you watch someone burn their hand on the stove and you say, nope, not me. I'm going to go ahead and do some of that thinking now. You know, I'm going to do some of that proactive thinking before something takes place. I'm going to get in front of the eight ball, you know, in a sense, like not behind it. And so you can do that by evaluating. You know, I always say that wisdom doesn't come from experience. Evaluated experiences create wisdom. And so you can evaluate your experience or evaluate someone else's experience, and that can create wisdom and insight. And so to answer your question, I think those organizations have to decide, are they going to be the people that burn their hand on the stove and learn that way?
Yeah.
Or are they going to be the people that watch what's going on and be a little more intentional with their maneuvers? You know, it's really just two lanes.
Yeah, make a purposeful movement rather than...
You know, and you don't have to, you don't even have to move forward to get to that point. You can literally just stand still. And I tell people innovation's three things. It's intentional, it's tactful, and it's considerate. It's those three things. And if you are intentional with your thoughts, your energy, your manpower, great. If you're tactful, you're very strategic, right, with your moves. You know, you're being, you know, very, very, very purposeful in those things. And if you consider it, you're considering more than just your situation, right? You're getting to be a little futuristic in that. But those three things, it's, you know, innovation is not I found a dollar on the floor, you know.
We had a conversation a while ago on this podcast in the beginning about in and around the question, whether it's bearing in mind that like we're all going through the same kind of forced change. So changes in the air, whether we like it or not, should companies take this opportunity to pivot, to change, to do all the stuff, like to transform themselves, to, you know, look round corners they've not looked around before, launch new products and services, because it's easier to change when you're, you know, your standard way of working, your standard work week, work day is, has been disrupted so much. So we looked at a company that you probably know, IBM, the computer company, right?
Yeah.
They've launched their first startup in 43 years, like within 6 weeks over lockdown, to do communication design, like for their digital transformation clients. Because obviously there was a lot of their lot, because they deal with people with, say, 20 million to 50 million pound transformation projects, right? So the top end. So they were that sort of level of company with a bit more resource used that time to go, right, well, let's do it now while everybody's off. And then we'll relaunch as a thing. So they did that, and there was a few other options like that. But like, what do you think? Do you think it's we should encourage people to change while everything's a bit up in the air, while change is still in the air? Should companies, entrepreneurs, do that thing?
I think you know, going just my human-centered lens, I think that serves us well as people. In general, you know, I always say that personally and professionally, we're the same people. We're literally, like, I can't wear my robe to work, so that's a little different, you know, but the same Joshua shows up personally and professionally. And so if I am in my personal life, someone who doesn't embrace change, right? Change is loss and loss is change. And I am someone who doesn't embrace that in my world. And then you put me in a role of like CEO for an organization. What do you think I'm going to do with the opportunity of change?
Yeah. Well,
probably nothing. I'm not two people, you know? So if I'm creative at home and in the kitchen, when I cook, most likely when it comes to problem solving at work, I'm probably also going to be creative. And so when you look at organizations that are just choosing not to embrace this opportunity, I would say organizations are beautiful buildings and gorgeous architecture. I was like, but they're made up of people. And so literally it's humans inside of it thinking these decisions. And so if they're like, should we, you know, take advantage of this opportunity? I was like, well, the question is, why aren't you? You know, why are you even as humans, as people, even asking ourselves, there's an opportunity for change and growth in front of us, and we're debating if we should take it or not.
I think that's exactly right. So in the workshops that I deliver as well, I always frame I ask people to come with a problem or a challenge. And because we're British, right, we're kind of, a lot of people are a glass half empty, right? So looking at the problem, like say that a bunch of people were hunkered down for months, like at the beginning of lockdown, when nothing, if you'd stayed and watched and learned and engaged with the people you wanted to serve in your team, you probably would have found a little bit of momentum eventually, right? But I always frame like opportunity is a flip side of the coin from problem solving, right?
Right.
Getting people to to view them as challenges. You know, that's why I like the human-centered design world and the how might we statement.
Right, the statement starters, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're beautiful. I mean, I think to go back to the question about should people choose it, you know, that goes back to the innovation of intentional, tactful, and considerate, basically saying we have an opportunity in front of us. Will we be intentional with it? Will we be tactful in our approaching of this thing called an opportunity? And will we be considerate? What are we going to consider in this particular time? You know, it's asking ourselves those questions, going to the statement starters. It is about reframing, you know, the challenge in a form of a question, because they all are very intentional. Like how to, you know, there's four statement starters. One of them is being how to, right? How to, when you think about what how to does, how to provides you what? When you like how to do something, it makes you have to start thinking of steps, right? Yep. How might we starts to think, make you think of process and way of, yep. Right? What would it look like if allows you to think of that hopeful future?
Yeah,
right. You know, and so these statement starters are designed in such a way to open the brain up to explore some of, yeah, how to design a challenge around it, which is why, like, you know, when I'm meeting with my team, we're talking about it, we spend like hours on the reframe of the statement starter, because that carves the way for how you go to solve this problem. If you go how to, and it shouldn't be a how to, you're creating a checklist in a situation that doesn't really need it. You know, that's that intentional, right, piece, you know, being very tactful with your approach of solving a challenge. And what are we considering? And so I do agree with you. I think people should be, you know, look at that opportunity as to say, we're putting a relationship with change right now as an organization, as a business, as a department. And what are we going to do with it? And just start going around the room and asking themselves that question and being present in that silence, right?
Yeah. It's a scary process for some, though, isn't it? That whole... knowing where they're going and asking people to be creative it's really hard for some people to get into that way of thinking. You know, when I always liken it to somebody's created a product, you know, they've created a new pen, for example. They've built that over the last 20 years because it's always been the back of their head. They've got that pen. Asking them to change away from something that they've tried to do for 20 years is a big ask. I've been able to get people to ask that question in three very simple words, or two very simple words, in how to, or how might we. That's a big challenge for a lot of people to get through.
Yeah, the beautiful thing I love about like human-centered design. Oh, I'll tell you, remind me to tell you guys a story about the university. But the thing I love about human-centered design is that it is it's three things. It's engineering, which is the very like, kind of strategic way. It's psychology, and it's also visual thinking, right? Visual thinking. But going to your point, the psychology aspect of it is those design thinking tools are designed to help get someone to think a different way. You're talking about rerouting neurons, right?
Yeah, completely.
That's what you're really talking about. And I'll tell you, I've seen people, you know, the psychology aspect of it, I've seen people get really anxious in a room.
Yeah.
You know, like I've seen that silence, like make the heart skip a beat. I've seen them get nervous. I've seen them clam up. Like the people stuff shows up. It's to say, you know, this isn't about like the direction yet. We got to deal with you as an individual. And so like, you know, I tell people that the answer is discovered. It's discovered. And so the way to live in that space that you're talking about is to always challenge people to minimize their certainty and maximize their curiosity.
Yeah.
You have to maximize your curiosity. You have to ask questions. And be okay with the answer being discovered. But you're right, that is a process of that person really grappling with the changes, loss, and loss is change.
I liken it to trying to get a five-year-old to do something. Mm. You know, if a five-year-old goes to do something and they don't do it correctly, and you say to them, well, if you haven't done it properly, how might you have done it? Right. They're never going to shy away from that challenge to work out how to do it.
Right.
But yet, a lot of people inside boardrooms or inside organizations really shy away from it. And it's all we're trying to do is get them into a state of psychology of there is no wrong answer.
Right. And the idea of building with people, not for them.
Yes.
Right. Because as you're in that role, you bring those people into the room together. The decision maker thinks that it needs to make the decision to say we're going this way. But the decision maker, it's called like servant leadership, right? Lead from behind, in a sense. Rally the troops, you know? I have a lot of my team members make the decisions, actually. Like, literally yesterday I was meeting with a team member and she's like, I keep realizing that when you ask me what I think, you're really wanting to know what I think. I was like, yeah, you know, because corporate America, in a sense, says the other thing. Yeah. Like, says, I'm going to ask you what you think just so you feel good and I have your thoughts in it. I empower my team, man, to make the decisions. And the leader in me actually supports their decisions.
Yeah.
It actually goes behind them and says, servant leadership says, where would you like to go? I got your back. I'll be the fuel to your decision.
Your approach to that, Joshua, is very Simon Sinek in Leaders Eat Last. And actually you let the people inside your organization drive the path forwards and you're there as a support tool.
Right, right. Yeah, very much so. They know more than I, they're living it, right? That's the idea of the human-centered design, is tapping into that experience. And there's data in that. There's tons, because I'm not just into, like, you know, I believe heart and head. Heart and head is where understanding's created. And yeah, there is tons of data, tons and tons of data in someone's experience, which is why, like, there's a design thinking tool, empathy mapping. And we saw the old school ones in the world of, like, consulting. And I hate that word, by the way. I hate consulting. And I'll explain why
a little later. That's Tim's favorite word. That's
Tim's favorite word. Yeah, Tim, do you light up? Do you light up with the word?
No.
Right. But the idea is of, you know, human-centered design, it's, you know, for us, you know, we've seen a lot of different processes and all these other things of how people make it as 8-20-step process. We simplified it down. Like, we made it really simple for people to grab a hold of. And it's understand, explore, and materialize. And in each of those stages, there's two phases. In the understand phase, it's to empathize, research and perspective taking, right? Empathy is not sympathy. It's literally research and perspective taking. You're not going into problem solve mode yet, which is typically how organizations work, right? Fire, put it out. Yeah. So you grab a hold of the research, then you define. You get really clear as to what your research showed. You didn't even go into problem solve mode yet. But when you fully do that, you then have now a complete understanding, or at least a holistic understanding. Then you can move on to the explore phase, where you begin to ideate and prototype. Then you move on to materialize, test it, and implement it. The beautiful thing about design thinking is that it is this messy but forward process. Because when I test something, there might be some new insights that come. So guess what I need to probably go do? I might need to go back and understand a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and so it is this kind of process that works well together. So it's a beautiful thing if it's adopted correctly.
I'm a big fan of spending a bunch of time on diagnosis or problem definition at the beginning, right?
Right, yes. Can we get a hand clap, like, for a moment? Yes.
Because like, people, at least from my perception of people, are super good at solutions, right? I just go, oh, I know the answer, it's fine.
At least in their own head, they are.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, at least in their own head. But it's that, like me and Steve have spoken about this as well. There's a need for that type of thinking to come to the fore. In fact, there's been a few cases over the last few months of where innovation departments and creative teams are now at the front line of the business, because the traditional business stuff has, you know, been affected more. So they've gone, hey, you know that cool creative thing you were thinking about for 3 years' time? Yeah, we need to do it now. You know, and doing that. But a big part of that, and a big part of a skill of leadership or maybe a role within creative departments or boards is that of a facilitator, right? Sure. Like, sure. Facilitation as a skill, I think, especially if faced with challenges like this, because some people are saying that there may be more challenges like this more often as the future happens, you know? Yeah. The role of facilitators should be a must for a lot of companies if they're trying to keep going, or maybe leaders get upskilled and reskilled in the world of facilitation, because it's
sure.
It's most of what work is now, like, especially if you're remote, right? The art of facilitation, you can't just huggle everybody into the meeting room and get them to listen to a thing, right? You need to take a step back. You need to be able to connect dots. You need to give permission to the people to think a bit more, right? And understand it and be all right with uncertainty, maybe.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, if a leader or an organization can tap into the best asset they have, which is their people, they win. They literally win. It's the best tool that they absolutely have. And I think they look at individuals as this commodity of, you know, an assembly line, you know. One of the biggest, you know, a good story real quick is that I sat with a VP, you know, not too long ago, and he was telling me, he brought me in to like look at this before, prior to COVID, and he brought me in to look at a process, or a strategy that he put in place. He's like, take a look at this, like, because we're struggling. Like, my team isn't connected around it. There's not a lot of collaborative effort. Like, they're not getting it, right? And I was like, cool, take me through your process. Let me see it. Walk me through it. And he walked me through, you know, what he put in place. I was like, okay, you know, so I can get an understanding around it, and I see it. And ultimately, when I look at it, I look back at him and I said, you know, I see what you designed here. I was like, but you designed this for you. I was like, you created this strategy and put this in place for you, which is why you're connected to it. I was like, you didn't design it with your people in mind, and you didn't do it with them. And they're the ones you really desire to execute on this. They're the ones you really desire to be connected and collaborative. Why would you not bring them to the table to help you actually problem solve this? And he kind of just was baffled, you know, in a sense. And what I explained was, I get it though, which is why, going back to facilitation, it's hard for individuals that are going through struggles or problems, challenges, to see the inside of the house and the outside of the house at the same time. And so these leaders and these facilitators have to be able to navigate the personalities and the people and the challenge in a room to help people move forward. They're the individuals looking, they have to look at the outside of the house after first taking a tour of the inside, you know?
I think it's also a change of focus on what people perceive they should be doing in their job roles though, Joshua. So
sure.
You were talking about VP there, where, you know, 5 years ago, even a VP would be expected to sit down, write a strategy to put in place that people will go and execute for them. And actually, we all know that that doesn't work. Well, it can work, but very, very rarely. What you need is to help you to design it. What we need to do is almost change that terminology of what that VP should be doing, which is not to build the strategy, but to facilitate the co-creation of a strategy.
Beautiful. That's it. That's literally it. Yeah. Yeah, that individual needs to be able to look at that he doesn't have the answer. She doesn't have the answer. That the answer is discovered with its people. And so you want a strategy, great. You bring the right people together and you put them in a room together and you facilitate phenomenal learning, ideation, future casting, all these great things. And you watch your strategy being one of those things that never sit on the shelf and collect dust.
Yeah.
You know, and so it is. It's a matter of shifting the roles and people beginning to ask themselves, roles specifically, is my role serving the organization, the climate, the challenge well? And if it's not, saying it's not isn't a bad thing. It isn't saying that we made mistakes. You know, it's actually saying that we just need to evolve. Like, we need to grow. But so many people hate to admit that they're, you know, that they're stuck. You know, they hate to admit it, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. We spoke to another guy over here, a British guy from the northeast of the country called Michael Owen, and he's ex-agency guy and builds, he's got a few little businesses, like a sustainable knitwear company called Always Wear Red, but he's a really smart guy. You should check his blog out, 50odd.co.uk. Okay. It's really good. 50odd. But it's really good. You'll like his stuff. But he's I listened to him do a talk about a question about, like, what are you for? Like, because he deals with a lot of brands and leadership stuff, and he asks people like what they do, and they go, oh, it's my job title, or like a job description, like the tasks that I have to do. And he's like, no. What are you for? Like, what are you for? What are you trying? Stop telling me what your job title is. Right. Like, what are you trying to achieve? What's the next level, the depth, right? And that brings you back to, like, the human centeredness, right? If people thought organizations were living co-creative, connected groups of people trying to achieve a thing, like whatever this thing is, then work will be, but there'll be happier people doing good work, and they'll be better at doing the work, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I want to like help people, everyone listening, to like really grab a hold of this human-centered design and how it can look real to them. And so for us, you know, we're a design consultancy. It is that we say people first, process second, which means that there is a consideration of the individuals, the user, you know, who you're marketing to, branding to, whatever it may be, and you craft a strategy around those people. What's interesting is the world, though, is very they're saying design thinking. It's sexy, right? You know, it's gorgeous, it's sexy. And I spoke at university some time ago, and I spoke to the students, and I was on this panel, and I never even went to the university, but they brought me in. It was a beautiful thing. And so I may not be invited back, though. But I was on this panel, and a student said, I keep hearing you say human-centered design. Is it human-centered design or design thinking? Everyone in the panel was, everyone before me, I was at the end, of course, was like design thinking. And so I kind of raised my hand, and I was like, hey, in my turn, you know, kind of raised my hand a little bit. And I ultimately said, you know, I may not be invited back after this. I was like, but this thing isn't about design thinking at all. And you heard nothing but silence, crickets. This is where we'll implement crickets for the podcast. Quiet. Crickets. All right. There's going to be a sound for crickets there. But we heard crickets in the room, and literally said, I said, let me explain. And I said, again, going back to the people first process, I said, how many of you have vehicles and cars here? And a lot of students raised their hand. And they're like, well, we do. I was like, great. Okay. I was like, so you know, when you pull out of this parking lot, it's 35 miles an hour. And they're like, yep, we know. I was like, cool. All right. So, you know, you have your speedometer, a strategy put in place, a process put in place to keep you going 35 miles an hour. They're like, yep. I was like, okay. I was like, and just in case that doesn't work, you pass a speed limit sign. Speed limit tells you big 35 miles an hour, another process and strategy to have you go 35 miles an hour. But just in case you still don't go 35 miles an hour, there's a police officer at the end. That is another process and strategy to help you go 35 miles an hour. I was like, right? They're like, yeah. I was like, but yet you still speed.
Yeah.
I was just like, so you have these processes and systems put in place to drive a certain behavior, and you know that, and you still speed. And so what it showed was that that's design thinking. Design thinking is literally a series of tools and processes. That's literally what it is. It's a toolbox of a series of tools and processes to do what, though, right? It's to get individual to solve problems human-centered. So if I wanted those students to stop speeding, should I put a speedometer in place, a sign, and a police officer? I probably need to first work with them on why they speed. I need to first look at their relationship with speed.
Yeah.
Like the psychology behind it. But that's messy, right? That's the messy people stuff that's unsexy. You can't, you know, Forbes that. But the reality is that when you're trying to drive human behavior, you have to start with the people first. Then we will know that the speedometer, the speed limit sign, a police officer actually didn't work for them. We have to put new strategies in place to fuel the behavior that we want to see happen. But we have to spend time with the individuals to know. So as organizations, go ahead, Steve.
Sorry, people are scared though, aren't they? Because, I've said that about 4 or 5 times in this episode, but, you know, people are scared because everybody's different. Everybody will have a different relationship to speed and the reason why they ignore those different tools that have been put in front of them. And people don't like messiness. They like to compartmentalize things and go, oh, you're going fast because you need to get somewhere within 4 minutes. Great, you're in that box. And somebody's inside another box for another reason. And people like that because it's clean for them. They don't like people who jump between boxes.
Well, when it comes to solving challenges like organizations and businesses, I tell people this, that we often ask ourselves what we know about the challenge. We're like, what do we know about this challenge, right? And that sounds good. I mean, even coming out of my mouth, every leader listening right now is probably like, heck yeah, dude. You know, what do I know about the challenge? What we need to do is actually ask ourselves what we don't know about it.
Yeah.
But that's the scary part, Steve. That's what you're talking about. The moment I say that, again, what we don't know about the challenge versus what we know about it. Because we're looking for validation and comfort. We're looking for, I knew it, you know, a confirmation bias and all these other things. I knew that's what I knew about it. You know, we're just, I was like, you're spending your energy fueling what you already know. So then you solve it the way you've always solved it.
Are we looking for a confirmation bias, or are we just looking for an easy way out?
Yeah, I think and or, I think both, you know? I think confirmation bias is the easy way out.
Yeah, coming back to your original point at the beginning of this podcast where you talked about takeouts and all doing the same thing, everybody right. just jumped to the easy way out.
Right. That doesn't make it, we're not required to change.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. It's basically, let's solve that thing over there. Like the, you know, I was talking to an organization the other day where we're implementing some things. And I said, you know, if you don't grow as an organization and challenge yourself as people, as in the organization, whatever you're putting in place is not going to work.
Yeah.
It is not sustainable.
When you talked about that, and it's just going back to the original point that it just popped up back into my head. When you talked earlier about the takeout thing around people going to restaurants, et cetera.
Right.
In the UK, everybody jumped to takeout straight away. Yep. But then there's been two or three companies that have been very clever and have gone, hang on, we're fighting in a very busy market here. And actually, right. most people are still going to do their weekly shop in the supermarket. Let's freeze our takeout food and stick it in the supermarket for people to buy in a supermarket to take home to cook themselves.
We're going to insert hand claps into this podcast right here. That's what we'll have the audience cheer in that moment. Yeah, yeah. But imagine what that room was like, right? To have to think about that.
Yeah. I mean, I sat back and I went, oh, great. I'm going to go to the shop because I really like that chain. So I'm going to go and buy that from the supermarket.
And it's pre-ready. It's ready for me. They thought about me, right? They thought about the user. They said, they know I'm going to the store. They know I love their food. However, getting something hot to go, whatever, isn't accessible to me right now. They thought, when you saw that, you were like, I could imagine that they were in a room thinking about me.
Yeah, exactly.
They were in a room considering me. Now, they benefit. The result of human-centered design, designing strategies for the people, is a win. Like, you win. Now, you go back to some of your previous podcasts where you talk about brand loyalty, whatever. You know, you just felt thought of by that chain.
Yeah, completely.
That's it.
A couple of words have been with me over the last couple of months, really. And that's like meaning.
Is it consulting? Was that one of the words?
Yeah.
Okay.
Consulting in Guinness were his two words, I think.
Five words have been with me. meaning and reason. This was quite a deep point as well.
Sorry about that. Sorry.
Meaning and reasoning, right? Like meaning and because people are looking for now, I've seen that they want more connectedness, right? So they need a bigger reason to be connected to a brand, to a product, to a service, to a process, whatever it is. And so we've got to all try and make stuff mean more in business. Sure. Right? And that comes back to what you're saying, you've got to be considerate. Your point, right? In order for it to mean something to the people you serve, you've got to be considerate. I've not heard that it described as consideration before, but it's exactly that.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you know, I think I saw a data point, and don't cite me on this, but I think it said that we make 86% of our decisions based on emotion, right?
Yeah.
So here's what's interesting. Me just providing that data, whoever's listening right now felt a type of way about that data just now. That data drives emotion as well. Like, I just drove some emotion by dropping some data, you know?
It for me. My first thought when you said that was, I really hope that's true.
Right.
No, I hope that people do make decisions on emotion because that's the right way to make decisions.
Right. As people, again, going back to that, we're holistic, you know, like think of the whole person. Like, that's what I think people forget is, you know, and there's an old day where when you showed up to work, it was like, hey, leave your crap at the door, you know, just show up, do your 9 to 5, whatever it may be. And that's a sad thing, you know, and going back to Tim's point, Tim, we did this thing here. It was kind of like reimagining networking because I hate the word networking also. And so we for 2 years, we ran these like six words, right? we did this thing that was reimagining networking. And it was this really cool event, cool talk series. There was designing these cards. One of them was, I'm not my business card. And, you know, typical networking is, you know, hey, I'm so-and-so, part of this. Here's my email. Here's what business I'm a part of. Here's the cool initials at the end of my last name. Are you impressed? We should build a relationship. That's usually how it kind of goes. And so in this meeting, we kind of debunked a little bit, I'm not my business card. And we did this define and design exercise where they got business cards when they first walked into the room. Now we let them network the way they normally would. And they're, you know, showboating, peacocking, all that great stuff. And so we end up giving them these cards and we said, now we're going to like redesign your business cards. And like on the back of it, there's two slots and you fill them in. It's two things. One is, hi, my name is, and the value I offer to others. And what was interesting was I said, now we're going to go and you're going to re-network in a sense. You're now going to go meet people using those business cards only. And so we had this list of things you can't talk about, which was your education, your organization, your business, your email. The only two things you were able to talk about was what your name is and the value that you offer to someone else. And so we had them like meet someone, switch, and we brought everyone back into the room. And I was like, how did it feel? And I had a young lady raise her hand. She raised her hand and she said, she's like, I felt more human. And I responded to her this. And I said, shame on the places that you have ever walked in that made you feel anything less than.
Yeah.
I was like, shame on the places that never created an environment, a meeting that ever allowed you to show up holistically as who you are as an individual. Because who you are is where the best ideas come from. When that person feels and is valued and heard and brought to the table and all these other things, they show up in ways that they never knew that they could.
We just interviewed a guy from, there's a company down the road, down the road from me actually, called Cooper Parry, and they're an accountancy slash auditor firm, right? So they
were- So people like them a lot.
People like them a lot, right? Yeah. They you should check out at cooperparry.com, right? Because they're one of the best brands in this country, if you know about it. And they thrive and designed some kind of crazy culture, right? Around their brand and their values and being yourself. And they were saying exactly that same thing. People think we do tax and auditing and accounting and all that like dull stuff. But when they transformed their brand into the way it is now, into a culture first, people first brand, they Steve, the head of creative, spoke to all 450 people, like individually in their building, to build and formulate what this thing be, because he needed them. Like, although the idea came from top down, right?
Sure.
He needed it to live from the bottom up. Right,
in
everything, and it was literally that, you know, putting the people first. We think we want you to be. It was cool as fuck. The brief title was, "We want this company to be cool as fuck." Right?
Yes.
Which is amazing.
We're
an accountancy, right? You can see how different they are.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And it was like, okay, so what does that mean to you, to 450 people? How would this place of work, this accountancy firm, be cool as fuck to you?
Like, right.
Is it venue? Is it the language? It came out of the language was a big part of it, wasn't it, Steve? How they speak about.
Oh yeah, you know, that's marketing, right? That's messaging, right? Communication in itself, you know, in a nutshell. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful example, but it was just reminded me of that example you said of shame on the people who don't let you be who you are, right? Who have to play a different role just because you're at work.
But in order to integrate in any other part of your life, would you? You would never let somebody treat you not as a human in any other walk or form in life.
Right. And in order to create that culture, the answer is, you know, kind of what Tim was talking about, that organization. But in order to do that, you have to be intentional, right? And tactful and considerate, right? You're considering others. You're being intentional with your strategies. Tactful with your strategies and very intentional with your purpose. You know, for us, like our kind of we got away that we deliberately tossed away the mission, vision, value stuff. And we have something called a vision statement in a sense. And our focus statement is what we call it. And it's we shift the thinking cultures of organizations by serving the people in them.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we can shift how an organization thinks, you know, we shift how they see. And if you shift how they see, then you shift what they do. And, you know, going back to, you know, Steve, your question is, we wouldn't allow that to happen anywhere else. We as people who are talented and amazing have to have a standard. We have to have a standard. You know, when we are part of an organization, we have to say that, you know, I am looking for an organization that assists me with shifting how I think and shifting what I see and shifting what I do. We as people have to have a standard. And we have to know that we're talented and we're gifted and that we are the best asset to an organization or to a department or to a group. And when we have that standard, we're not going to settle for anything else. We're not going to allow a leader to run us off a cliff either, you know?
Yeah, I think that's good. I think the last few months, the last few COVID months, have probably expedited behavior like that as well, because people have, by no fault, like without any decision being made, become more autonomous, because you can't spend 8 hours, like you spend 8 hours a day in the office being managed. Like you can't spend 8 hours a day on Zoom. Jesus Christ, it's tiring.
Zoom fatigue's a real thing.
Zoom fatigue's a real thing. So you've become more autonomous, right? And there's been, like, at least in how you structure your day, maybe people who are a bit more morning people get their work done first and then have more time. Some people who take a while to get going can do it in the thing. But as long as it's become that freedom or that permission to do the job you're meant to do, right?
I mean, COVID created an opportunity for people to reflect more, you know, and it's sad. You know, I tell people it quieted the noise, if you allow it to, right? Going back to your point of embracing the change, it quieted the noise. And that's when we begin to ask ourselves, we have to ask ourselves the questions, right? You know, I think of like Steve Jobs for a second, you know, love or hate the guy. You know, I think about when, you know, back in the day when he was fired, right? You know, I think about that. You know, he was fired from his own company. Like, that's crazy in itself. But what I thought about is that when he left, he could have left and bought like 8, you know, island on the Cayman Mountains, put a castle and a planet over there, just stay there for the rest of his life and collect some money. He could have done that and lived a great life. But what's interesting is in that time away of silence, he began to like ask himself certain questions. He began to ask himself, why did I get fired? What type of leader am I? What have I kind of done? What part did I contribute to where we kind of are? And so obviously we know the story. He comes back and he's rehired to be the leader that he is. And when he comes back, he created the thing that revolutionized Apple, which was the iPod.
Yeah.
Imagine that though, right? Imagine when you go away broken because you guys got fired, and in that silence you begin to explore. And you come back to the table and you leave your organization to create the thing that they didn't create when you were originally there.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's that, there's a big thing about that giving yourself time to think though, isn't it? Like going back to unstuckness, right? Getting unstuck. Right. Like it's giving yourself or somebody giving you the permission and the freedom to take a step back and go, do you know what? Like, I can carry on butting my head against this thing, or I can just stop for a second.
Right. And what we're talking about is the human stuff, right? So it is a matter of saying, we're given this change and this opportunity. Are we going to be innovative with it? Well, yes, a leader right now is listening. He's like, yes, I'm going to be innovative with this time of COVID. Well, cool. How do I do it? And it goes back to that. Are you being intentional with this time? Are you being tactful with this time? And what are you considering in this time? I'm sure that's what was going on in Steve Jobs' head when he was off, you know, fired. He was being intentional with that time. He was being very tactful of the things and strategy he put in place to change who he was. And he was being very considerate of that situation and what went on. Then he comes back and they innovate.
Yeah, they take a good step forward. I think that's a massive lesson for the people listening, even though it will be in a few weeks' time after this. There's still going to be the need for that. Why we're still faced with any number of unknowns, and all we know is
there's always unknowns.
Yeah, there's always unknowns, right? There's even more now, but you know, why we've got that time, like to take that time and think.
I think that we've still got the same amount of unknowns. It's just a shortened timeline quite often now. And actually having an approach such as human-centered design can help you bypass some of them that time?
Right. You know, that's the idea, is that it is open, it is creative, it is free, but some of the design thinking tools, it's structured as well. Yeah. That's the beautiful thing about human-centered design, is that it is considering the individuals in the room, but you bring in the design thinking tools, which means that we are going to learn, think, do, and fail all at the same time. Yeah. And we're going to do it quickly. We're going to learn quickly. These tools are designed to help us learn and fail and think and do and learn and fail and think and do, all while actually moving forward, not standing still. So imagine, you know, I mean, a workshop with us is crazy energetic, but we are learning, failing, thinking, doing, and moving forward at the same exact time. And that's the beautiful thing. And you do it again with the people in the room.
But it's so, I think you said it before, like it's the way the reason I like design thinking and human centered, even though me and Steve are marketers technically, right? We are very design driven. Do you know what I mean? There's more of we're more human centered design than just like coloring stuff in and making it pretty and getting it out. Like, because a lot of marketers here in the UK that we've discussed as well are gauged successful by how much activity they do, not by the impact it makes. So it's
right.
It's noisy and shallow a lot. And right. I mean, we've discussed this before, so I don't know how popular our third season of the podcast will be.
It's going to be great. We're gonna reinvent it. You know, but you know, it is. It's human-centered design is the consideration, right? I tell organizations, there's so many ways of thinking. You could think analytically, you could think business-wise, you could think research, you could solve your challenges in different forms of thinking. To say, I have a challenge in front of me and I would like to think in a very research mindset, only research, or in a very analytical mindset. Design thinking, human-centered design, is a way of thinking. It's a way that you've decided that you are going to go into and solve this challenge. Great. Well, how do I do it? We use design thinking tools. Think of a painter. You would want to feel confident that painter first knows how to paint before you actually give him the brush to start painting. And that's the idea of human-centered design, is that are we knowing what's going on and who to consider before we actually go to solve this challenge? I spoke to a bunch of deans in a university not too long ago, and we talked about like innovate with empathy, which is kind of something that we do. And I remember a bunch of deans saying, we don't have time to think this way. We don't have time to look at these empathetic kind of quadrants when considering leading our team, our school's innovation, or whatever it may be. And I was like, listen to what you just said. I was like, you don't have the time. And they were like, well, this is a lie. And I was like, well, it's because it's not normal for you. But I was like, let me explain. And so we have what we call here firefighters in the UK. Are they firefighters as well?
Firemen.
Firemen.
Firefighters.
Firemen. We'll say firemen, firewomen, firefighters. Excuse me, like politically correct. I apologize. But what we did is, what's funny is I went and proved these deans wrong. We went and interviewed a group of firefighters, firemen, who show up to a problem and in seconds have to go in there and like put this fire out in seconds, right? Problem, solve it. They're, you know, think about that. Problem, solve it, right? And so we went and interviewed these firemen, these firefighters, and I was like, tell me the things you guys think about the moment the siren hits. And they're like, well, we are, the siren hits, we immediately think of all our gear. Do we have it all? While we're driving, we're talking. When we pull up, we're thinking of the best route to enter into the house. We're thinking about our partner that's going with us. We think about where the individuals are in the home or where they are in the fire. And we think about an alternative route just in case something was to go on. I was like, wow, you do all that in seconds and in minutes. Which goes to show that when we are presented with a challenge, we still have the opportunity to think through, right? I tell people a lot that fast is just fast. Fast isn't well thought out. And so we have the opportunity, even when presented with a fire, to actually be well thought out.
Interesting. That's interesting. Because when you brought up firefighters, my initial thought was, well, they're the relationship between reactive and proactive, right? I was like, well, they're reactive. Right. They've got a fire. They've got to solve it. But right. Then, as you
put it out at any cost. Put it out at any cost, right?
Yeah, right. By the time you'd finished, I was going, actually, they're kind of proactive because they've just been made aware of the situation, and they've thought it through, no matter how short the time frame is, right?
They're active
about it, whereas on the face it looks kind of reactive. So that was interesting.
And so what they did was, if you think about what happened, where going back to Steve's point, there was a way of thinking that was introduced to them. And that's the shifting of the thinking culture. Their thinking culture was, their scope was, we always have minutes, regardless of the challenges that come, we always have minutes. But their thinking culture was the things that they're going to think about and how they're going to operationalize to make sure that they are solving this challenge the most effective way possible. And you guys as marketers, you definitely are, you are intentional, tactful, and considerate. You can tell that you care about who you're designing for, who you're marketing to, what the communication's like. And I want to take a quick pause to celebrate you guys, because one, if you guys look on Spotify and you see like 3,000, 4,000 plays or whatever, they're all me, by the way. I've listened to them like multiple times. Every single one is me, but you guys know your stuff, man. And like, honestly, you guys know your stuff. And I'm just want to encourage anyone who's like listening, like they got to like remain plugged in. Cause I've listened to every episode. And again, there's probably one that's like 3,602 plays, and that's all me. But yeah, you guys know your stuff, man. Like, you truly, truly are very, very present in the changes that need to take place in order for people to do all the things that you've mentioned.
That's very kind. Like you say, it's new, right? This is a new project for us, but we have these conversations. You should see our WhatsApp chats, right?
Download
them and make them into a book one day. Sometimes our WhatsApp chats are intense. We have a friend called Amir, actually, is very smart, like super smart guy. He's a Seth Godin old NBA coach and stuff. He's good. But he has he's one of those guys that when I go out for a meal or have a chat with him, you need a little sleep afterwards because he's kind of deep and stuff like that. But we've had there's some good conversations going. So we just thought we'd have them live.
Let people listen in. Really appreciate you saying that. It means a lot because realistically, it's just been me and the bald one just chatting away. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, you wonder when you think of that human-centered thing, actually, when you do things like this project that we're doing here now, you wonder if you're too human-centered on yourself when you talk about things. But this is the type of chat that we'd have down the pub.
Right. You know, exactly. Like, you know, you're describing the inside of the house and the outside of the house. Like me on the outside, I'm listening and I'm hearing, and I am saying there is so much value in what you guys are saying. And it's coming from, and it's why, you know, we're a design consultancy, and people are getting the 20, 30 years of experience that comes with an individual on our team or whatever it may be. People are listening and they're getting so, if they listen intently, there's so much value, honestly, in what you guys say. And as you were talking and I was listening to it, I was like, I want to just be at the table and have a drink and have a bourbon or scotch, like, or whatever it may be, a pint, you know, as well. Like, I want to be at the table and just participate in giving this value to people. And I encourage them to hopefully have a pen and paper when they're listening, because there's tons of value that you guys are offering to people that could literally, you know, plug intended, shift their thinking culture. But truly, yeah, you guys are hitting it out of the park.
Thank you. That's good. I mean, we do, like I say, the whole re of marketing thing is to just get people to think, because it's like it's messy, right? And it's noisy, and it got to the point, I think we said in one of the early episodes, where when people ask in a network situation, like, what do you do? And I have to go, people who are just listening to the audio, I'm pulling an embarrassed face, like, oh, marketing, but not that stuff that you,
yeah.
Like the,
yeah.
not that that's making you walk away, the other stuff.
Right. I mean, what we tell people when people ask us, you know, what do? I explain, I was like, you know, what's your challenge? And they're like, well, we're taking too long and we're thinking this way and we've solved this problem 8.5 different times before and we tried this and we tried that and we paid several different people to come in and walk away with no results. And I was like, we help fix that.
Yeah.
Like by getting to the core of like literally what your real vision is, you know, and starting with like really the center of the organization and what you're trying to drive. And I was like, all of that wasted time and effort and money and lack of intentionality, like you meant well, but I believe in intention versus execution. I believe intention is like, well, I meant well, you know, or I meant to not speed, but you actually sped, like, you know, so I believe in execution. And so the idea is their intention of what they're intending for their organization or for their marketing strategy or for their brand, is it being executed well? And what I'm seeing more and more is that organizations are trusting other organizations, like they're bringing people in and trusting them with their baby, which is their challenge. And people are not taking, they're not being good stewards of it. You know, they're not being good stewards to explore it for them with the intention and the tactfulness and the consideration. They're not being good stewards of those people. And I tell organizations that our goal is for you to never need us for the same thing twice.
Ever. How well adopted is human-centered design in the US, Joshua?
I think, well, design thinking, everyone would tell you that they're adopting it if you said design thinking. But yeah. Human-centered design, it's tough, you know, because people have to decide that's how they want to solve their challenge.
The reason I ask that question is because, obviously, in the UK, we're always probably 5-10 years behind. You know?
Sure. But I hear your government allocates money for really great innovation, possibly sometimes, you know, the incubators and all this other stuff. But bringing the right people to the table, right? That's the idea, is bringing the right people to the table and those funds. But for us, you know, I think in the States, you know, everyone loves the new sexy thing. But if you think about human-centered design, design thinking, it's not new and it's sexy. It's been around since the 50s. You know, there was a book.
When I think in marketing terms in the UK, you know, where I think a lot of teams or a lot of companies and organizations are slowly moving into agile processes and design thinking. Right. But if they're not doing design thinking at this stage, what they should be doing is bypassing design thinking, going straight to human-centered design, and then understanding the tools of design thinking that can help the human-centered design.
Beautiful. Well said. And that's the idea of the organization, the agency saying, we have a challenge and we would like to solve it in a human-centered way.
Yeah.
When they get to that point, that's going back to that very, when they get to that point to say, we have looked at it through a business lens. We've looked at it through a strategic lens first, process first. We've looked at it through so many these lenses and it is not working. We would like to start to solve our challenges in a human-centered way. Then we bring in the right tools, right? Remember, you'd like to understand that that person knows how to paint before you gave him the right tools to paint. And so it's for us, it's the same thing as organizations, agencies saying, we have a challenge and we want to be human-centered about solving it. And we're willing to put some processes and operations and strategies in place that help us stay there as an organization as a whole. We begin to solve all of our challenges this way.
Well, one of the ways that I do a bit of delivery and workshops and stuff with clients and leadership groups and stuff, and I never lead with the fact that it's human-centered design or design thinking or service design or the lessons that we're doing, like, because some of them will A, not understand it, or B, have a preconception of that it's not for them because they want a practical answer. So we always go... do like a creative working or a growth centered workshop, and then the last hour is, by the way, all we've done is this process. It's actually called design thinking.
Beautiful.
And adopt it. These tools that you want, it's just convergent and divergent thinking. It's just
right
definition, right? It's all part of this process. But if I came in going, do you want a design thinking workshop? You go, no. Thanks. We just want the answer.
Yeah. You know, and the idea is that they, you know, eventually you're showing them how to replace old cogs with new cogs. You know, you think of a watch that isn't working, you know, a classic watch, at least not Apple, you know, whatever, but you go it in and you need it to work functionally. They're going to look at the cogs. They're going to look at all the things that make that watch work in order to get it operating the way that you desire it to. And so, you know, it's interesting when people are like, no, we want the answer. And I'm like, well, you already have the answer. It's inside of you. You just got to quiet the noise, get rid of the crap, stop the comparison, you know, and begin to think about it differently. You know, the idea is, I tell people all the time, don't you think before you do something? Now it might be stupid thinking, which is why you do stupid things, you know, but the idea is like, don't you think before you actually do?
Yeah.
And so what we're doing really? Is get...
All the time, I think, I wonder what she's going to say to me if I spend that money.
Right. You're considerate, right? You know, you're considerate. And so the idea is you're empowering organizations to just think differently before they do.
Yeah.
Think different. There you go. That's been said before, isn't it, Mr.?
Yeah, true, true. Should I coin that? No, I'm kidding.
You could have it.
Right. But it is. It is literally saying, you know, let's give them something different to process, to think about. Let's, because the organization, remember, it is people. It's a human. You know, if you think of Oreo or Coca-Cola or Pepsi or, you know, Radio Shack or whatever, if you were to look, I tell people a lot, look at your agency or organization, if it's an actual person sitting right next to you, if it's an actual human, because then it goes back to everything you guys already talked about. What's the brand of that person? What's the communication, the marketing of that person? What are the values and belief systems of that person? How does that person think? Are they oppositional, right? Are they confusing when they talk? Like all these other things. Like, so think of that individual as a person sitting right next to you, and describe that person.
I think that's a great point. A great point. One of my favorite takeaways to round off our conversation today, and let you get back to your afternoon, I imagine, but or morning.
Right.
I think there's like changing the thinking culture of your organization is a massive takeaway for me. Like that.
Right.
Like the way that's phrased and explained is really good. I often say it's, no matter what kind of creative work you're trying to do, it's about changing mindsets, not
correct.
Not, it's not the activity, it's not the stuff, right? It's not making the thing.
It's not the process, it's the people first, right?
Yeah, and doing that. So that's a really strong lesson to be taken away from.
I think the biggest takeaway is people first. There is no other way to cut it. It is people first. And the other thing that I really like that you said, Joshua, was empathy is not sympathy.
Yeah,
that really landed with me. I don't know why. I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah, that was really good.
40 minutes afterwards, and I'm still thinking about though empathy is not sympathy.
There we go.
So wrapped up in trying to understand what empathy is.
Right. That's probably another segment itself. But we have a workshop we do. It's called Innovate with Empathy, and we show people how to use empathy in order to garner the best research perspective and data ever to clarify literally. You know, like they've never clarified before, to understand their person in ways that they've never, you know, had before. And so it is, you know, my takeaway from this is that you guys are brilliant. When COVID goes away, I hope people expect, like, we're going to do an event together. It's going to It's going to be amazing. I'm coming across the pond and we're going to do an amazing event together and just help people get unstuck, you know? And so, you know, for anyone listening, man, I love to have conversation, you know? So I love conversation. So this was beautiful. If anyone wants to get at me, you know, and have a conversation, feel free to email. Can I shout out my email?
Yeah, look,
I'm about to give you my direct email, everyone. This is flood the inbox. My direct email is joshua@spillteam, and that's spillteem.com. So joshua@spillteam.com. Email me directly. Like, you know, tell me how awesome that Tim and Steve was, you know, during the podcast, but. Man, you guys are brilliant. You know, I honestly, and this conversation are the conversations that I think businesses truly, like, it's healing for them. Like it's, you know, if they really take advantage of it, they're saying, man, I am so glad that someone quieted the noise for me and led me down that type of thinking. I now know how to approach whatever I have going on. And you guys are providing a conversation that can lead them that way and help them with a North Star. And that's just, it's awesome. Tons of value. I believe in free education. You guys are like, it's a providing it. So, you know, it's, yeah.
Thank you, man. That's good. We'll put Joshua's detail in the show notes so you can find them appended to this and take advantage of. But that's been brilliant, really insightful. I always like conversations because I always learn a bunch anyway. And I've enjoyed following you guys and your company on the socials, on the gram, because you put some good stuff out on there. So we'll put all the links and the handles in the things below. But you'll have to come back when you've got another thing to share.
I would love it.
Another view from over the way.
Over the pond, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love it. Now, this has been good. You know, I love it, man. You guys, thank you for, like, the opportunity, seriously, you know, and you guys are talking about really great pillars, you know, that people really could stand on. I think it's a beautiful thing. And so if anything to take away, let it be marketing, branding. It is people first, process second. You know, make sure that's the lens and the thinking that you walk into your challenge with. I'll leave people with this, that I always say, whenever you're going to solve any challenge, you should always ask yourself, what's the human need behind it?
Amen to that.
Awesome.
Thank you. Absolutely
awesome. Wow.
Wow, people. Wow, people. That was Joshua Rene from Spill Team. I told you in the beginning, he'd bring some energy, and him and his Spill Team crew have an awesome outlook, right? And there were so many lessons in that about that, like changing the thinking culture, putting consideration and being considerate within the strategy and the planning bit was a big tick for me. Yeah, really interesting. What about you, Steve?
I loved him. I actually loved him as much as
him a little bit.
I just think that whole thing of the psychology piece of marketing, we forget about it quite often.
Yeah.
And we just do it. But actually bringing that back into the fore was critical to me with what he was talking about, and just the energy.
Yeah.
Absolutely awesome. One of the top three guests we've ever had.
One of the top three guests. Good joke, that. Are we going to do it for every guest?
Yeah, I've nicked it off another podcast, so I don't think it's copywritten. I've come off that call I've got so many ideas just buzzing around my head, and absolutely awesome. Human-centered design all the way,
Good, full of lessons. Well, thanks very much, people. You know what to do. You need to subscribe, you need to share, you need to tell other people, you need to follow me and him and tell the word about it, because Joshua Rene says we're awesome.
Yeah, he actually liked us, surprisingly.
Surprisingly.
Yeah, for somebody who knows humans, he actually liked us.
Yeah,
that says a lot.
That's a big tick in the the Podshow cast book.
Yeah,
excellent. Anyway, end. Yeah. TTFN.